Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 10th of October. Glad you're listening. If you're getting up in the morning trying to get started for work, maybe you've pressed the snooze button for the 13th time or trying to drag your kids out of bed and get that 6:45 bus off to middle or high school. Regardless of what you're doing this morning, we're glad that you're joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, along with producers Paul Perot and Logan Rausch, who are in the studio. And as we start our day together, we'll talk about some of the relevant news items of the day, special interest topics as they come up with guests from around our country. And if you listen to the show, you know that we will stay anchored to a real faith and a genuine hope, because we do serve a king of an eternal kingdom that knows no end. And so regardless of what's going on in our country or in our world, and sometimes the events can really be difficult and troubling, we do know that there is always hope and always future because of this kingdom that knows no end. And of course, as we're doing the show and talking with guests, we certainly love hearing from all of you. If you want to join the show, maybe you have a question for one of the guests that you'd like me to ask, or just some comments based on some of the comments of the guests themselves, we'd welcome you to call the show or to text the show at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We certainly love hearing from you. Our first guest this morning is going to be Bob Smetana of Religion News Service. He's the editor-in-chief of that, and Bob and I will be talking a lot about the religious headlines, including the ongoing crisis in the Catholic Church, as well as some events that are coming out of Willow Creek, one of the largest Protestant churches in our country that certainly has been a thought leader over the past 25 years in America for Protestant churches, and yet there was obviously a pretty significant meltdown among leadership there, some troubling headlines coming out of the senior leadership and Bill Hybels in his treatment of women. And so we're getting a glimpse in what the future looks like for both the Catholic and the Protestant church that really is legitimately struggling at this time. And so Bob will join us and talk about that. We'll also talk a bit about how we as Christians can respond to the Judge Kavanaugh situation and what we see moving forward. In the second half of this first hour, we'll be joined by Kent Kaiser, who is the Department Chair of Communications here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And I'm going to ask Kent a bit about some pretty significant news that came out yesterday out of Washington, D.C. Maybe you caught this if you were following the news yesterday.
It has been an honor of a lifetime. I said I am such a lucky girl to have been able to lead the state that raised me and to serve a country I love so very much.
And that, of course, is the voice of the ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, who rather suddenly stepped aside yesterday. Of course, there's lots of conspiracy theories and everybody has their opinion about why that is. In her own words, she's saying it's just time to move on, something different. She had not planned on doing anything like this beyond 2 years. And there's lots of speculation about her political future as well. So Kent will certainly chime in on that. So it should be a great first hour ahead. I know Bob Smetana is on Skype already with us. We've chatted this morning. Should be a great conversation first here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, and we are joined on the Skype line by Bob Smetana, who is the chief and editor of Religion News Service. And good morning, Bob. I think you know, based on our chat, that we here at Faith Radio Mornings have decided to join the division and rancor in our country. And we were talking about whether it's Bob Smetana or Bob Smetana, because I think I've called you both during our times together on the show. So it is Bob Smetana, though, officially. You can see,
yes.
We can at least solve some of the division in our country.
Yes.
You're going to help
us
out.
So we solved it. There we go.
That was really easy. Well, how do we solve the Judge Kavanaugh situation, Bob? I know it's one of the articles that you and I were going to chat about. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of different possible reactions and responses to what we saw out of Washington the last 4 weeks or so. Any suggestions for believers looking at all sides of this?
Well, that's a bigger question than I can answer. But I would say that there are folks from who look at that situation. I mean, there's a couple things going on. So there are a lot of women who, and we've seen this in churches, right, who have experienced sexual harassment and sexual assault in the past and have never been able to talk about it. So that's a big question. Right? That's the kind of the underlying question of all this, whether who's on the Supreme Court, is that women in churches and in businesses and all over the place are being able to talk about this for the first time in the public eye. And it's not easy conversations, and people have sat out for years. We ran a story at Religion News Service from Jules Woodson. She's a young woman who was assaulted as a high school student, didn't say anything for years until the pastor assaulted her. She came forward and he'd become a megachurch pastor. And I think it's the, you know, it was in Memphis. And when he said that he'd done something, you know, the church and confessed it, the church gave him a standing ovation. So she really did. She talked about in her piece, you know, it takes a long time to come forward. Churches don't listen to you. You feel ashamed. And so I think that's one thing, regardless of the Supreme Court situation, is that churches and other and Christian folks can pay attention to what women say about these kind of assaults and take them seriously.
Well, and I think, and I don't know what your experience is with churches, Bob, but having been in pastoral ministry for a bit too, I think, you know, if women are going to begin coming forward and trying to find place where they can talk about their experience, maybe it's been in the dark for quite some time and they want to bring it to the light, I fear that churches may be overwhelmed and don't feel equipped and possibly even feel disempowered to really help women in the conversation moving forward. It certainly isn't something that came up in my pastoral training very often. And I just don't know many pastors that are equipped to deal with this. So where can we go to find hope and healing in these difficult moments?
Well, I think that listening is a big thing. I think finding professional care would be an important thing. You know, I'm not a counselor or a pastor, so I don't have the advice on that. But I think, you know, that paying attention to folks, that's what we see in some of these abuse situations in churches. They just haven't been able to talk about it and acknowledge people's, that's a starting point, right? If you just say, well, we have to protect the church's reputation. So if it happened at church or people's reputation and you won't talk about it, that ends up, it doesn't go away.
Yeah. In terms of that, you know, there are some things that certainly are not going away, and that has to do with the crisis in the Catholic Church. I know you and I have talked about that over the past couple months as well. And there was a youth event within the Catholic Church, and it sounds like there's, you know, obviously a pall cast over the event a bit because of the elephant in the room and the abuse. And it doesn't seem like there is any significant resolution within the Catholic Church to have dealt with this crisis of abuse of young people. Where do we see this going from here? How is this being processed right now?
So there's a couple of things going on. So there's sort of two tracks of this. There's the ongoing abuse, which is so for example, here in the States in the early 2000s, the abuse crisis really became public. And so, if you've seen the movie Spotlight, it talks about the Boston Globe's, investigation in the Catholic Church in Boston. There was investigations before that in the South. I think, so there were changes made in the church to report, to do more training, to do more screening, to take things more seriously. But they have this kind of whole backlog of cases that have never come to light. So there's been a whole process here in the state. So a number of states. So in Pennsylvania, the attorney general looked into what, you know, the church's files over abuse cases. And did a report on that. Some other attorney generals are doing that. Now, so a lot of cases, churches already turned over their files. So that's one part of it. The second part is, questions what happened with Archbishop, or Cardinal McCarrick, who was in DC, who had been, sexually harassing, seminarians. And there's a question, there's a political question in the church whether, who knew what, when, and, was his conduct covered up? So that's going on. I think the church is trying to say, you know, we know this is a problem. We're trying to fix it. And I think now they just have the long process of not just acknowledging it and not stopping it, but also what do we do to make restoration? That's their long process. How do we restore people? How do we acknowledge the sins of the past that's going to be a very long process.
Well, and I think moving forward from here, it's not just even dealing with the sort of events of the past, but Bob, I'd be curious your take. I know that in so many parts of the world, there is a secularization happening, especially in the Western world. And so if there's such a crisis in leadership and credibility in the Catholic Church and people start feeling like, I can't trust the church, I've got so many other options in life these days now. Is it possible that with at least within the Western world, we're going to see a renewal, revival in the Catholic Church? Do we have a historical precedent for this kind of thing?
So that's a good question. So you have, I mean, we have seen two things in the Catholic Church. You have two things going on. For example, in the United States, you have two things going on. You have the white Catholic Church, which is in decline. Folks are aging. So like in New England, where I grew up, the Catholic Church has been the largest religious group for a very long time. But after the abuse scandal, their mass attendance dropped. But if you look around the country, the Catholic Church has not declined because of the growing Hispanic population. So you're seeing that it's going to be like other denominations. I mean, Protestants are seeing the same thing. The number of people of color of faith is growing. The number of white Christians is shrinking. So you will see it'll be a different group of folks. Now, we haven't seen how the abuse scandal, at least in the States, is played out in among Hispanic churches. But that part of the church is growing.
It's Bob Smetana that we talk about religious items about once a month here on Faith Radio Mornings. And he's really dialed into sort of the many conversations we're having as a country on this. And Bob, when we come back from break, let's change the conversation over to the Protestant church. Talk about with some updates on the Willow Creek leadership situation and the impact that might have for Protestant churches moving forward as well. So Bob Smetana joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner and joined by Bob Smetana, who's the editor-in-chief of Religion News Service. And Bob, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the decline in attendance and within the white Western kind of population, but there's a growth happening among people of color, both in the Protestant and in the Catholic Church. Is there some sociology behind this, Bob? Why the demographic shift, and why would it be growing in one segment of our population while declining in another?
So there's two things going on. One is just that the demographics of the country have changed, right? The country is becoming more diverse. And so, as the country becomes more diverse, the number of folks in certain kind of denominations are going to grow, or certain religious categories. So that's one part of it. The other part is just that, most of the secularization among Americans is happening among white Americans. So, if you look some of the data from Pew Research or from the Public Religion Research Institute or other places, Hispanic Americans, African Americans have much higher rates of affiliation, much more religious than white Americans.
And in terms of that, is part of it, I know that there's a correlation between the amount of education people receive and exposure to sort of global ideas that also leads to a decline in religious attendance. Is that part of what's happening here as well?
I don't know. This is a great, so a lot of it is. So there's a group, if you look at Pew Research's religious landscape, there's a group of what people call the nuns. And the biggest, those are people with no religious affiliation, and they're mostly white, and mostly male, and mostly just stop believing. And that's why they don't have any religious affiliation. So there is kind of a crisis of belief in that group.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch moving forward, and especially when one of the significant thought leaders over the last 30 years or so in Willow Creek experienced the crisis that they did last spring in leadership, where Bill Hybels, the longtime senior pastor, was accused and pretty much corroborated to be a person who has been, let's say, untoward at best relative to some sexual advances and abusive at worst. And certainly as the stories come out, they're not favorable. And there doesn't seem to be a clear horizon moving forward yet for Willow Creek. And that can be troubling for a lot of Protestant thought leading in our country.
Yeah, no, that's going to take a while. So they just asked over the summer, they asked four outside leaders, including the head of the National Association of Evangelicals and a couple denominational leaders, to come in and help. So to oversee an investigation into both Bill Hybels' conduct and the kind of culture of the church. Meanwhile, they also, we just did some reporting on this. So the attendance at the church is down about 10%. over the past year. They are going to have Brady Boyd, who's the pastor of New Life Church in Colorado Springs, which had its own meltdown when Ted Haggard had his scandal. He's going to come and talk. I think he's going to talk to some of the staff. They have this outside group coming in. I think they have to deal with, we just did a long piece on this. If we look at some of the experts, they say the church basically has to deal with what happened and then start to rebuild trust and then take a long time to, just rebuild the congregation. So that will just, it's just going to take a while. This is not something that gets solved quickly. There are probably people at the church who want to end and just move on, get a new minister and go. But there's a lot of, healing from the past. And then a lot of looking at is did their structure, which had so much, influence around the world, their way of doing things, was it healthy? So it's really interesting. We have a piece that's coming up in RNS about, looking at the people they asked to come help them. So, Willow Creek really helped push the non-denominational model of church. And yet when they needed, now that they need help, they've gone to denominational leaders and institutional leaders to say, we need help. So that's a really interesting development.
It's going to be fascinating again to watch that, especially because Willow Creek was sort of on the front end of what was a interesting movement around the megachurch movement, where we're talking about 5,000, 10,000, sometimes 20,000 people involved. And some of the analysis coming out here is that so often these megachurches are really birthed because of the charisma or the popularity of one person. So here are some comments about the Willow Creek situation by those involved, including, I'd love your comments on this, Bob. It says, a tragic example of what happens when you elevate one person to a position where there is minimal accountability. There is an adoration of this person, almost like a demagogue, and a powerful church leader will then end up surrounding himself with people who are loyal to him instead of people who actually can and will hold him accountable. And certainly we've seen this play itself out several times in these megachurch situations.
Yeah, that's what happened at Willow. So they had rules, and then there were rules that didn't apply to Reverend Hybels. So the problem of being a minister is, I've always thought about this. I covered religion for a long time. The problem of being a minister is that you really have to, you're trying to build a church, you're interpreting God's will for people, right? As in you get in the pulpit, you're interpreting the scripture, you're trying to help people see what God's will is. And I think for some ministers, it becomes hard to, or I've observed that it becomes hard to distinguish between God's will and their will.
Yeah.
And then if you get a highly successful minister, so really the church's structure failed the minister too here. So you have a powerful minister who has a lot of gifts who built it, and they had an infrastructure that was built around the person and said it had a plurality of leaders. But anyone who's ever covered Willow Creek knows that Bill Hybels was in charge and he always won. And so that was an unhealthy situation. And I think, it's probably a lesson there that even, you see this in small churches, you see this in big churches, that the charisma of the pastor has to have some accountability around it.
Well, and certainly oftentimes the elder board that could be the group that's holding the pastor accountable, they're the ones that maybe bought into the vision brought forth by the senior pastor. They're the ones that have been shepherded by the senior pastor. And so for them to be the ones that hold the senior pastor accountable, that gets to be a pretty tricky situation.
Yeah. And that senior pastor brings in money and you have a building and you have to pay the mortgage. And so these aren't easy things to negotiate or to discern when you're in the kind of those leaderships. You see these groups and you talk to them. It's easy to say from the outside, well, they should have done this or that, and then you do some reporting on it and you realize these are complicated situations. But I do think that whole structure and accountability, and that's one of the interesting things about the Willow Creek situation is that. And that this would apply to, I would think, almost any congregation. Many of the people who ended up confronting Reverend Hybels were friends. And so anyone who's been in a congregation for a while may know of a church leader who was their friend who they had to confront. And that's always difficult. And that's at a big church or a little church.
It's Bob Smetana of the Religion News Service. He's the editor-in-chief there. And if you're listening this morning, it's a great website to go for news on many different dimensions of the religious conversation in our country. It is religionnews.com. Bob, thanks for joining us this morning and just sharing the insights and your expertise on all of these topics.
Oh, glad to be here.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Kent Kaiser. And we'll get into some of the political updates, including the resignation of Nikki Haley yesterday here on Faith Radio Mornings. Pretty significant weather events happening in our country here over the next 24 hours or so, including a Category 4 hurricane that's going to be hitting the panhandle of Florida. First time in 100 years we've seen that level of a hurricane hit landfall at that point in our country. So continue to pray for our people down and believers and non-believers both in the Florida area. And, of course, our friends that are listening to North Dakota this morning, I've asked each morning that you pray a weather barrier of snow away from Minnesota where I am right now. I want to thank you for your prayers, but apparently the snow has busted through, and we are expecting 3 to 6 inches in northern Minnesota this morning. So I do think it's October 10th. I'm not sure, but, boy, it seems to be coming early this morning. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by pastor and author Daniel Darling. He's released a book titled The Dignity Revolution, and he was talking about the things we place our identities in other than Christ.
Our identity is not found in our desires. It's not found in our struggles. It's not found in our work or our resume. Our identity is found as image bearers of God and redeemed image bearers of Christ. And it also affects the way we see others, not just the way we see ourselves, but the way we see others. Do we value them based on what they can do for us? Do we disvalue them because they are in a different socioeconomic class or a different race or perhaps different political tribe? I think it matters as parents the language we use about people groups and about the language we use about ourselves.
Interesting segment with Daniel Darling yesterday in terms of how we view one another. It can be the first steps to a healing process as we're so divided as a country, as we're divided theologically, to at least start with seeing that we are image bearers first and foremost. So if you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and hear all of what Daniel had to say yesterday. Well, I'm looking across the studio at Dr. Kent Kaiser, who's our regular Wednesday guest. I know how many of you that are listening love Kent's take on different things, and I'm just going to give over the morning show to him, I think, for about the next 25 minutes, and we'll see what Kent has to say here on Faith Radio Mornings.
There are significant reasons why being a biblical Christian nation is so important. This is Jim Garlow. It's the Bible that sets forth the principles of religious toleration, non-coercion, and the rights of religious conscience. For example, consider Joshua's words to the children of Israel as they entered the Promised Land. Quote, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." End of quote. Joshua offered the people a choice. Each could decide their own choice, but of course each one had to live with the consequences of that choice, for good or for bad. But nonetheless, each had a free choice. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, and if you listen regularly, you know that those bagpipes signal the arrival of Kent Kaiser into studio, who is the Department Chair for Communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And Kent, last week you revealed that you once drove in the presidential motorcade at one point, and now I come to find out that when the president was in town in Rochester last week before the big public rally, that you were invited to sort of this really small private rally. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was about, I would say, 100 people or so in Minneapolis, right by the airport. I think they must have shut down the airport because this hotel is right there in the circle that you drive around to drop people off or pick them up at the airport. But, yeah, it was a private event. It was a donor event, and I happen to know the person who's the fundraiser. So I got to go, and, yeah, it was great. The guy, President Trump is amazing in person, and he was really burnished, let's just say.
More so than usual.
Unfettered, because there were no cameras there. There was no media there. And in fact, when people would hold up their phones for too long, he would be like, no recordings. You know, he was fine with pictures, but and he actually had a staffer going around and making people put down their phones if they seemed to be up for too long, longer than a snapshot. So he does use a lot of swear words, I'll say that. But aside from that disappointment, he is hilarious. The guy uses many sound effects, like he was describing how their military took out a bomb that was headed for the Saudi prince's palace or Saudi king's palace, and he's making all kinds of noises, like sound effect type noises, to describe the engineers from MIT who are now in the military, who are the gunners, who use the guidance system to take out the bombs, and it was blink 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 blink, just all kinds of sound effects. I can't possibly replicate it, but he did talk for quite a while, and the topics were wide ranging. It was kind of a random association kind of thing, which is funny too. But he really knows how to sort of push people's buttons and cover the topics that they want to hear about. And he was just spectacular, I thought, in person. He really said a lot of the right things. I wish that, in a way, other than swearing, I wish that he could be that unfettered just in front of the American people all the time, because it seems to me it's so refreshing, and it's exactly what people elected him for.
Hmm. How'd you get this invite? I mean, do you have to sign up on the dark web or something, or how do you get into these circles, Kent?
No, I used to run a political action committee, and so this fundraiser – she's always had candidates that I was donating to through that pack. And so when I heard this event was coming to town and she was going to be the boss of it, I called her up and sort of asked if I could show up. And she said, well, yeah, but you have to give whatever you can afford. So I don't know what a normal person had to pay to get into this. I know that was $10,000 for a photograph with the president.
Wow.
And obviously I didn't do that. I don't know what a normal person paid, but I was allowed to go and pay what I could.
Wow, that's pretty exciting, Envoy. Regardless of the president, right? But to be in that small quarters of the president, what a deal last week. Well, there was plenty of news that came out here yesterday, specifically related to somebody who was pretty popular by all accounts in the White House in Washington, D.C. She had an ability to kind of cut across the different segments within Washington, D.C. That's Nikki Haley, and we had this announcement yesterday.
It has been an honor of a lifetime. I said I am such a lucky girl to have been able to lead the state that raised me and to serve a country I love so very much.
What was your first reaction when you heard the news that Nikki Haley was stepping away from her post as the UN ambassador?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise, but I mean, she's been there since, I think, day four of the administration. She was among the earliest people appointed, and she's an interesting character in that she was not a supporter of President Trump. She was a big critic of President Trump during the campaign, and then she was one of the earliest ones in there. And I think that she's part of the reason she's very popular is that she has been very strong at the UN, and she has espoused this administration's views, especially on Israel and other important issues abroad. But she is like a tie to the anti-Trump people from prior to the campaign. There are many people I think you'd call what we know as rhinos, Republicans in name only. In other words, that they're liberals who are call themselves Republicans who support her. They're sort of the more she's really from kind of a more of a Bush era type of foreign policy stance too. So she's really an interesting character because she does serve this administration but has so many followers elsewhere and from other areas of the conservative movement. And she is someone that people look to for the future because she is pretty young. Now, she yesterday said that she wasn't going to be running in 2020. In fact, she said she'd be campaigning for President Trump. But we all have to sort of wonder what the political future holds for her. But she's so young, though, that she could run for president in 2024 or 28 or whatever, and she'd still be a young candidate at that point compared to who we have been electing lately.
Well, and it was interesting to hear, too, that it was pretty much a surprise, to your point, that, she left when she did. Clearly, the people like Mike Pompeo that were working closely with her didn't see it coming. But there was one person who claimed he did see it coming.
She told me probably 6 months ago, she said, maybe at the end of the year, at the end of a two-year period, but the end of the year, I want to take a little time off. I want to take a little break.
Now, I don't know if that's true, that the president really knew it was coming at this point, but it does speak to the fact that he does seem to have a pretty positive view of Nikki Haley and that her plans moving forward would probably be supported by the president should she decide to run in the future.
Right. Well, a little time off. Who knows what that means? I mean, maybe she's got another plan for something else that's, who knows? Maybe she wants to go into the private sector and work for a while, and she'd certainly be in a good standing to do that. Now, the question is who will replace her, and it was interesting yesterday among the first names that came up was Ivanka Trump, who would be spectacularly well qualified for the position, but she took herself out of the running. The president right off the bat said, you know, that he'd be accused of nepotism if he were to appoint her, and that's probably true, unfortunately, because she would be an extremely strong candidate for that, given all the work that she and her husband, Jared Kushner, have been doing on the international stage. They've really been masterminding a lot of our foreign policy, things like moving our embassy in Israel and other different significant policies abroad. Ivanka Trump has been involved with those.
Well, and certainly related to her departure, there's quite a bit of conversation in our country right now about why she would have left. And of course, journalists want to come up with all sorts of sensational theories. But one of them, in your reference, is that she may be heading into the private sector a bit because people have dug into her finances and find that she seems to be in a bit of debt. It's nothing, you know, super significant, but enough that maybe she wants to eliminate some of that. Have you heard any of these theories about why she was leaving at the time that she did?
Well, it does become attractive to move into the private sector after you've served in government and not made that much money. And oftentimes people who are in positions like that in government are actually having to spend a lot out of pocket. People don't even realize that. I mean, and that's why it is oftentimes only the wealthy who move into politics and stuff. I mean, not everybody's as fortunate as the president to be able to donate their salaries back. Some people who are truly public servants actually need the money. And unfortunately, that means that you don't get necessarily everybody who would be the best qualified to be in government, but it also means that people serve for a short time and then go off to do something else, and she might be doing that. And people have been looking into her finances and kind of criticizing lately some plane rides she took from friends, but questioning the propriety of taking private jets to different places instead of flying a commercial or whatever. And I personally don't see any problem with the plane ride she took. They were with like high school classmates and stuff. I mean, these are personal friends. I mean, actual friends, not just friends because they were donors to her at some point in her life, although they probably were that too. She happens to have friends who have money, who have planes, and they're willing to provide rides. In some cases, it's probably saving the taxpayers money by doing this. So I just really don't see a problem with what some people are trying to dig up in terms of, you know, they're trying to say that there's issues of propriety here, and I don't see it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch because for her, I know that most of the analysis has suggested that she's banked an awful lot of goodwill across many different segments in Washington, D.C., and it sets her up pretty well. If she gets out of Dodge for a while and then reemerges, be interesting to see her political future. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I know you have an article about the bribery of Senator Susan Collins out of Maine, and just that she obviously played a central role in the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh. So I'll ask you about that next year, Kent, on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Dr. Kent Kaiser, and we're talking about the political scene in Washington, D.C. And, Ken, changing the conversation away from Nikki Haley, we see that Susan Collins, the senator out of Maine who played such a key role in the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh, she hasn't left the news, and I don't know that she will anytime soon. She certainly seems to be the target of both sides, Democrat and Republican, for her role in that process and maybe even her 2020 reelection.
Right. Well, and it's an important point to note that she's not up for election this year. It's not until 2020. But she did, of course, become a pivotal vote in that for the Kavanaugh confirmation. And she gave a great speech beforehand telling how she was going to vote. It was very mature and measured and rational. And just, it's one of those speeches that is, as a public speaking professor, I could definitely use and as an example of the kind of rhetoric that we like to see in Washington now and we hardly ever see anymore. It was something where she respected all sides. She didn't create any enemies. I mean, there were people who were going to hate her no matter what, but she did a very good job of, in a way, giving shout-outs to the opponents and respecting their views and so on, and laid out a very rational argument for her vote. But in that whole process, the liberals were demonstrating what I think you'd say would be the worst of politics. They set up a website beforehand trying to raise money for whoever her opponent would be in 2020. It wouldn't matter. And what they did was they set up this website in such a way that people could give their credit card numbers, and then they wouldn't charge that credit card for the amount that the person pledged if Susan Collins voted no on Kavanaugh. But if she voted yes on Kavanaugh, well, then they would go ahead and push through those credit card charges, which is what obviously they did. And so basically this amounts to a bribe.
Yeah.
And she said that. She said she denounced that fundraising tactic as a blatant and illegal attempt at bribery. And she said, quote, "This is a classic quid pro quo as defined in our bribery laws. They are asking me to perform an official act, and if I do not do what they want, $2 million plus is going to go to my opponent." And she said, "I think that if our politics has come to the point where people are trying to buy votes and buy positions, then we are in a very sad place." And in fact, my understanding is this fund has raised over $3 million, maybe up to, towards $4 million already. And so this is a sad place when over one vote. I mean, this is a person who, you know, I was thinking, even in that speech that she gave, all the liberals were just sitting there waiting for her to say the word "however" and then turn the whole speech toward their direction. And if she had, then she'd be their hero, you know. And this isn't as though Senator Collins is some raging conservative or something. She's pro-choice, and she votes with the Democrats pretty frequently on a whole variety of issues. And so it's not as though liberals can stand there and say that she's an enemy of some kind. She's usually a friend of theirs. And this whole thing is very interesting to me, because I think now what's going to happen is that you're going to have a lot of very conservative money flowing into this main Senate race in 2 years that otherwise wouldn't have been there. Typically, conservatives would kind of sit on the sidelines and let Susan Collins run for herself, and you know, because they don't necessarily support her or her positions. But now that she's done this, even the president said, "We owe Senator Collins this debt of gratitude," and I think that debt of gratitude is going to show up as conservative money flowing into her race in 2 years, because people will recognize that, yeah, for this kind of a vote, conservatives need her. But that's a far cry from the bribery that was taking place over this one vote. I hope that it's pursued and that there's some kind of charges against the organizations that were attempting this bribery, because it really needs to stop. We can't have it be the case where if a senator is going to take a vote on anything, where all of a sudden there's money actually being placed against them or for them based on the before vote for how they're going to vote. That's just not how our system is supposed to work.
Well, it certainly was a blatant attempt at bribery. Is it different at all, though, from maybe some of the lobbying that's historically been the case in Washington, D.C., that's maybe could be considered more like soft bribery? There's kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod that goes with that, or is that something entirely different?
Sure, I think there is, and I think, you know, we've had more and more scrutiny on those kinds of activities, too, and more reporting required by law. And but in this case, there really isn't a reporting mechanism for saying, oh, we gave this money to this particular candidate because of the opponent's vote on this particular issue. We don't have that. Usually it's, oh, this person's wrong on a whole variety of issues, and so we're supporting their opponent. Or this person is right on all of our issues, and therefore we're supporting them. It's rare to see it come down to this kind of level of a specific vote.
Ken, we have just a little bit less than a minute left here. Can you look into your crystal ball or your magic eight ball here momentarily and tell us what's going to happen in the midterms in about a month?
It's
going to be a big deal.
It's so hard. I've tried to ask like normal people, and one person I asked said that this whole Kavanaugh thing is harmful to the Republicans, but at the same time, she said that her district was going to flip over to Republican from Democrat when it's an open seat right now. On the other hand, I asked somebody else, and he thought that the whole Kavanaugh thing has now energized Republicans, and he thought that we'll have what you might call a blue or a red ripple, so that it would actually turn a little bit towards the Republicans. I don't really trust the polls anymore. I don't think anybody does. But, you know, this, we've got 3-4 weeks left here, and that's an eternity in politics. We've seen whole elections take place in like 10 days. So, you know, I'm not making any big predictions. I still think it's going to be a blue ripple in the House. I think the Republicans will keep the Senate, but I'm usually a pessimist though. So, you know, I could see the Democrats taking the Senate too, but.
Well, it'll certainly bear watching over the next maybe 3-4 weeks or so. It's going to have an impact on what happens between 2018-20 for our president as well. Thanks for joining us as you do here on Wednesdays and Faith Radio Mornings. I know our listeners love you, and have a great week ahead, Kent.
Thanks for having me on.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show. Always fun to have Kent in studio with us. He can cover such a wide range of topics. And coming up next here on Faith Radio Mornings, I see that Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com is in the waiting room. We'll invite him into studio, and we're going to talk specifically about ways in which we can handle the tricky situation of terminating employees. So Bill English up next.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at MyFaithRadio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at MyFaithRadio.com.